section 2. Subsection 2. Is that a corresponding change to repealing the rate making?
Well, that particular section only pertained to the state accident insurance fund, didn't it?
Yeah.
So if we're...
Yeah, that had to do with our rate making process. Since we don't make the rates,
That's right.
Not needed.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Could I take you back to section 32?
Sure.
Just for a second, I had a little note in my bill that we've got an extra "the" on line 11.
Line 11.
We took care of it.
Yeah, I took care of that by amendment.
Yeah, we had it out already. I didn't realize.
That's right.
Excuse me.
I got it scratched out anyway.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't there in the amendment.
That's the one big amendment we've made in this bill so far.
A couple.
Okay, sections 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, and 41. Extend over into page 22. Amend 656, 526, 552, 556, 560, 562, and 566. Again, by deleting references to contributing employers and contributions, and again substituting carrier-insured employers, employers insured with the Safe Corporation, and again these interim premiums and assessments wherever it's appropriate in those particular sections. Section 42 on page 23 amends 656, 576 to delete specific references to SAFE and substitute insurer and self-insured employer in the definition of paying agencies.
If we go to group self-insured, is self-insured enough?
Yes, I think so. That'll be grouped under the definition schedule if you go to group self-insurance, so that would include the self-insured employer. And if they aren't classified as a self-insured employer, they would obviously be grouped under a
insured.
So either way.
That's a problem.
As far as the I was thinking of the adjustment reserve, there'll be a distinction on that. They'll have two separate, if I recall.
Yes.
Separately provided.
That's separately provided for the adjustment.
Okay. Don't need a change.
No.
This way. Okay.
Section 43 amends 656583 by deleting any references to direct responsibility employers and again substituting the employer. Section 44 at the bottom of page 23 amends 656612 to substitute the word premiums for contributions. Authority granted the director to compute assessments for the administrative fund. Let's see, in section 45, middle of page 24, amends 656636 by deleting references to the contributing employers, awards reserve, Safe Corporation and direct responsibility employers, substituting insurer and self-insured employers wherever it's appropriate in that section.
Could you explain what the industrial accident fund is there? So the state accident, line 1617, State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation forthwith shall set aside in the industrial accident fund in a reserve account. These reserve accounts, could you define?
The industrial accident fund is actually the reserves of the Safe Corporation. We've given them a name, and it's been there from the industrial accident fund. Historically, it's there. It's a term that I guess has been used for 50 years, I suppose. And it defines is the reserves that are set aside for the liabilities of the insurance company. Within the industrial accident fund, there are a number of reserve accounts. There's a surplus account, there's a liability account for losses, there's a reinsurance account. And what we're doing is actually in the industrial accident fund is eliminating from the statute the names, those old names of those accounts, and aligning them more with the insurance commissioner's requirements. but we're leaving the term industrial accident fund there.
What is the administrative fund then? That is the actual operation comes
that's
out of
the
that?
Workers' comp department.
Administrative fund is a fund set aside, in the workers' compensation department.
That's not part of the state accident insurance.
See, all these monies are held by the state treasurer. These names simply identify for the state treasurer where the money goes. If it's part of the administrative fund,
the section 45 lists out all these different funds and retroactive reserve, administrative fund.
Must give the Secretary of State's audit division lots of them.
does that.
Okay. Thank you.
If you want to do away with the administrative fund, that's a problem.
I think Senator Kulongoski very effectively has done that if the bill is introduced.
Oh, yes.
Sometime in the future.
All of this stuff is sunsetted in his bill, right?
That's right.
But I believe the industrial accident, as you said, has been in existence a number of years, and that's where the $40 million came from.
Yeah.
I think the records should show that when Chuck Gill made that suggestion, Mr. Young was hyperventilating.
Section.
Doing it with a smile, anyway.
I would just get
Section 46, top of page 25. This amends 656640 by eliminating SAFE's authority to transfer specific reserves within the Industrial Accident Fund, but retains the general reserving authority. Sections 47 and 48 amend ORS 656644 and 656646 to again to substitute premiums and assessment where contribution was previously used. Sections 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, and 54 amend. ORS 656726, 728, 751, 752, 758, and 794 by deleting specific references to contributing employer, direct responsibility employer, contributions, and SAFE, and substituting again carrier insured employer and premiums and assessments and insured by SAFE Corporation wherever it's appropriate in those particular sections of the law. Section 55, which is over on the bottom of page 29, amends ORS 656807 by deleting references to SAFE and direct responsibility employers and substituting insurer, self-insured employer again where appropriate, and then again makes a related change requiring that certain claims be filed with the carrier. Section 56 amends ORS 656999 by deleting specific reference to SAFE and direct responsibility employers and again substituting insurer and self-insured employer. And Section 57 amends, getting into the insurance code here, ORS 731608 by eliminating direct responsibility employer and substituting insured employers other than those insured by SAFE. Section 58, Section 5859, again amend the insurance code ORS 731628 and 737560 by deleting direct responsibility employers and by modifying insurers to exclude applicability to SAFE.
I've got somehow or other on page 31
we deleted
lines
that.
Deleted. We already amended
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
These are the amendments
oh, yeah.
we adopted.
Okay, so that really gets us through it, doesn't it? You know, when we take a bill like this, it's basically making a few changes, name changes and so forth, and it's basically housekeeping. I'm just worried that we don't make some silly little mistakes in it. Has it been checked through?
Senator, I really appreciate that concern because when you do make this many changes in a bill, there certainly is some room to make some mistakes. We've gone over it. Boy, I tell you, a lot of hours to make sure that first of all we covered everything, and then that everything is correct.
Did you check it through legislative council? Sometimes I think you have more time to do it better than they do, but.
We submitted to legislative council after we had done it, and they've gone through it too.
Have attorneys from, say, the workers' comp department gone through it?
I don't know if they have or not.
Mr. Young?
We all.
Yeah, but have you gone through the bill and studied it so that you don't, have you?
More people go through it, the better, because they might pick up something.
Anything additional, gentlemen? What, we're gonna call up some other folks then. Can you retire to the back and then we'll come up and, Mr. Young, do you wanna come up? You, sir, come on up. What's your name?
Dick Gavick.
Mr.
Dick Gavick.
Excuse me, Dick, I'm sorry. I'll get to know people eventually. Come on up. Identify yourself for the records and then tell us what you think about the bill.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Larry Young, the Workers' Compensation Department Compliance Division. In reviewing the bill, we found one area that was obviously an oversight that has a substantive change. That's on page 17, section 28.
Page 17, section 28, gentlemen, in case you're following us, okay?
If I may briefly cover a little area that isn't addressed here, but when a employer does not have coverage or there is no guaranteed contract on file with the department that the worker, that the employer is covered, then he becomes a non-compliant employer. And if his one of his workers are injured, the claim, it becomes the responsibility of the department. The claim is forwarded to the State Accident Insurance Fund for processing, but we reimburse them for the cost of processing plus an administrative charge. Mm-hmm. Now, lines 31 through 35 of this amendment on page 17, if you read lines 34 and 35, it previously read that the required fees or premium are received by an authorized representative of the State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation or accepted by an authorized representative of a guaranteed contract insurer. With the change that has been made on lines 32, they have changed it whereas it means received by both parties. In this case, accepted means received in the old language. In the new language, because they have received and accepted may be considered to be an approval. The situation you have, a man comes in, he obtains coverage, he feels secure, he walks out of the office having paid his fee. The next day, his worker is injured severely, and the insurer can say, wait a minute, we received the monies, but we didn't accept it yet, or we didn't approve it. And it's just, I'm sure it was an oversight, but since they both mean received, the department recommends that the and accepted be deleted from the new language on line 32.
And accepted be delayed. Any comments, gentlemen?
As you know, that's under the old language. The private carrier had, you know, accepted by a guaranteed contract insurer, which is a private carrier. All they had to do is accept it. But they had to accept it, not receive it. They had to accept it. We had to receive it. All we had to do is receive it. What happens is you have some employers who, for instance, don't pay their bills, and they will wait until you cancel them out for non-payment, and you go through the procedure, and then they change their corporate name and come in and send you a minimum premium, whatever that is, to get coverage again. And if you just receive it, he's covered again until you go through the process of a couple months to get rid of him. And there are not very many who do this, but by having acceptance in there, you don't have to accept that if you don't want to. You can require him to go then to the assigned risk plan. I don't know of any. I don't know of any carrier who receives the money and then turns around and says no the next day. I'm sure the insurance commissioner would be a little concerned about that. However, if they want that to apply to everybody,
that's fine that way. But if you don't have to accept it, that means, and just receive it, they can stick it in the mail. When you receive it, you're on the risk without having said yes or no.
Mr. Young?
Mr. Chairman, it speaks to required fees and premium. It does not speak to an application. And that's what we're talking about. We're really talking operational procedures. I can receive an application, and I have not yet received the fees. But once I accept, the insurer accepts the fees or receives the fees and the premium, and has advised someone, yes, your required fees and premium are this amount, and then receive them, then they've accepted a contractual coverage. And it's not a matter of saying accepting the application. That's one thing. I agree with what Mr. Gill is saying. But once you accept the fees and the premium, that employer assumes he is covered.
Does an application always have to come first, or can that check just come first?
The check can come right with the application, and if you just have received, then you're stuck, whether you want a coverage or not.
Senator Hannah?
This simply was designed to give parity between the state action insurance fund and the private carriers.
Well,
what they're doing today.
Larry, let's read this, because I think we're on a apples and oranges thing here that I don't agree with what you're trying to raise there, because let's start at line 31. Read it. Workers' compensation coverage is effective when the application of the subject employer for coverage together, with any required fees or premium. I would assume that just reading that the application and money were in the same envelope. If they weren't, then they were in two separate envelopes, but they arrived together. Together means with each other. You're talking about an application.
Mr. Chairman.
Like Chuck said, the moment that money arrives, I think they are caught legally under responsibility of providing coverage for someone.
And I agree with you, Mr. That the situation is that an application is one thing, but they have to be together. And all the situation can happen when, if they say, and what will happen in a lot of cases, and this happens with SAFE as well as the other insurance company, they'll accept this situation, and then they'll go out and look the situation over and say, no, we don't want this responsibility. This is not really a good risk after all. And this worker or employer believes he has coverage because he's fulfilled his responsibility of saying, hey, I want coverage. He gets some kind of indication from his staff. I think this is a procedural thing within the companies themselves as far as this agent thing they're talking about, as many companies have agents out that are independent agents, and the agent says, hey, yeah, this company will take care of it. We'll accept your premium, and then send it in. There's a company has assumed that responsibility, whether or not they wanted to approve it or not. They have that responsibility because they received one of their authorized representatives, and they have the obligation then on the next section, which isn't included here, I don't believe, cancellation, to cancel the coverage.
Well, SAFE though doesn't arbitrarily go out and look at a scene and say, well, we got your money, your application, okay, we're refunding it back to you.
Mr. Young, if you were changing it, how would you change it? What would you do?
Mr. Chairman, the previous language says it has to be received by an authorized representative of the State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation or received by an authorized representative of the Guarantee Contract Insurer.
Accepted. You want to change to receive.
You just want received, and you want to eliminate accepted.
I believe, and this will have to be maybe checked by to background, that in many cases, accepted means received.
Do you have problems?
Received doesn't mean accepted, Larry.
I accept that.
Accepted.
That's what I'm saying.
You're receiving.
I'm definitely aware that it doesn't mean accepted. Right? But
he's,
I think,
accepting it, but he's not receiving it.
Is what you're saying. You can accept it, but yet not receive it, yet not accept that.
I'm saying
accepted
in this case means received, right, and the way it is, it means approved.
What would happen, gentlemen, if we left it the way it had been before this amendment and reinstated the A and the B?
Well,
could that solve the problem or not?
Not at all.
Not at
no.
all. Okay.
No, we want them, whatever it is, they want them both to be the same.
Okay.
You know, if it's received for one, it should be received for all.
Now, what is the problem if we allow them to, they receive it, and they also decide whether they want to accept it? What's the problem with that?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, may I explain about the guarantee contract? Maybe that's where it's confusing. The guarantee contract is the governing factor. It's the insurer saying he's assuming all responsibility for that employer. And there's a date on that, the effective date. This section is to establish what the effective date on that guarantee contract is required to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is, the employer has, or the insurer has 30 days to file that with the department. And there's a paperwork process. Now, from the period of time when the actual policy is taken out or accepted, until or signed off on, and the time we get it, we are not aware, or the process, there is no knowledge, except for this part right here, that employer has coverage. Now, any given time between that 30 days, if they wait till the 29th day to file that with us, and something happens that is significant, and they haven't really signed off on anything or have any other contract that an employer can go back to accept the fact that he feels he's covered, then the possibility exists very strongly. They say, no, we didn't really accept this yet or approve this yet, and so therefore our coverage is not bound, and our effective date is not. We don't have a problem.
All right, Mr. Gill.
Chairman, thank you. I just wanted to ask Larry, have you run into that problem with private carriers? Have they done that?
It hasn't been.
They've been doing it for 15 years now. Have you run into problems with them doing that?
No, I haven't. But this,
it's been in effect like that with private carriers for 15 years. And that, they have a responsibility. They're not trying to get on a risk, accept the money, because they haven't filed the guarantee contract, then turn around and say, no, you had an accident, so we don't want the coverage. And the insurance commissioner's office would, I think, be down their back so quick if they started doing something.
Do you agree
with that?
Mr. Chairman, Deputy McGavick, Deputy Insurance Commissioner, yes, I do concur. And even furthermore, the common law fleshing out the insurance code section that says the agent is the insurance company, and that, I believe, section applies to SAFE as well as the private sector. But at the time the application is received and the money received, the agent says he got the coverage, but the paperwork hadn't yet been done, which is a lot of paperwork, including this guarantor contract, which we even really question the merit because of bureaucratic red tape. It is really a surety bond, but wait a moment. Few work comp insurers are admitted in this state to transact as a surety, but you blow the smoke away, you look at the contract, and that guarantor contract is a performance bond, the state of Oregon being the obligee, the one that gets the benefits in the event that something happens to the worker of the employer who is insured, and the insurance company is saying, hey, we're slipping into the shoes of the employer, state, and incidentally, rather than paying the employer, we'll pay you, state, if the worker, if the employer doesn't come up to his obligations. It's kind of a circuitous situation because when the insurance policy is issued, a separate contract of indemnity to the employer. That's the real vehicle, but the state of Oregon wanted a little more security, and also the director work comp department needs something for the equivalent of a daily report or some sort of piece of paper that's indicating how the obligation of the employer is being satisfied under the comp law. So the guarantee contract is a vehicle, but I would submit, in concurring with Mr. Gill in the past decade and a half, that usually at the time that guarantee contract will hit the work comp department before the policy is ever cranked out. And of course, SAFE just cranks out an invoice, which would be a kind of a certificate of insurance, so to speak.
At the time that they're paid a fee by us, and I think, I'm not sure, I can't speak for the private carrier, but when they pay us the fee before we file the guarantee contract, there's a lapse of time. Mm-hmm. Larry's got concern
about that.
Make sure the employer's got the protection.
That's a legitimate concern, but obviously you can't file the guarantee contract run up the same day you sign up the insurance. So there's a lapse of time. The employer is given a form we sign, we stamp, as of that date. We are on the risk. We guarantee you that we're going to provide the coverage. So if we turn around and he has an accident and say, well, no, we changed our mind, he certainly has a course of action against us. And
I would submit it also falls subject to the Unfair Trade Claims Settlement Act. We do assert concurrent jurisdiction in the claims area with the work comp department, but seldom ever use it, but in gross situations, this would be one. Where we wouldn't wait for the director, we'd come down both feet in the neck of the carrier.
So I think then what we're hearing is that we ought to leave the accepted in. Is that what you want to do, Senator Hannan? That's what I want to do at this point.
And leave the received and accepted.
Received and accepted as it is. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we want to do. Now, if you continue to believe that that poses a real problem, why I want you to come to the full committee and explain it to the full committee.
Well, what I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, is ask him if someone can identify for us why that should be really taken out. That's what I would really appreciate, because it's the language in A and B only, but it's been moved up there with an and inserted in the middle.
We can't see any overriding reason to change it, but once we get the bill back, if you still are convinced, and you talk to these people, and maybe you can find some language that will resolve the problem among you. But if you can't, our inclination is to keep it there. Have any other problems with the bill?
No.
None other. How about you? Do you have some problems with the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hanlon, again for the record, Dick McGavick, Deputy Insurance Commissioner. The Commissioner is concurrence and delighted with SB 324 from the standpoint that it certainly corrects a long-needed overhaul. It makes more for readability of the work comp law. However, the Commissioner does have one very important concern, and that is with the Section 5.9 of this bill that deals
59.
Page 31, commencing at line 25. And that would be the conflict of SB 324 with SB 104 and HB 2600. Specifically, sections 39 of 104 and section 47 of HB 2600. The conflict is that in SB 324, the State Accident Insurance Fund, is in cleaning up the language, they left it unchanged, no substantive change, is that SAFE, at its option, may be a member of the Rating Bureau. However, under the open comp modified file and use measure of 104, 2600, those various sections that make up the open comp measure, two I just cited, has a specific provision that SAFE must be a member of the Rating Bureau, the purpose being to preserve the integrity of the statistical data. And it was only to be understood that if open comp should be enacted by either one of the two measures that carry open comp, 104 or 2600, that if it goes to a conference committee, that either the measures of 104, 2600 that says SAFE must be a member overrides SB 324 on this one concern.
Okay, do you have comments on that?
Yes, that was left out intentionally because that indeed is a substantive issue.
Right.
And we'll have to be resolved in the conference committee, so be it.
Okay.
It's understood. Or whatever.
Open rating does pass. Mm-hmm. I think there probably should be some adjustment to that. If it does not pass, I would suggest
the bill is all right as it is. But if it,
this is the Commissioner's position, if mm-hmm. open comp was enacted, that the measures regarding the provisions of open comp supersede this section 59 of SB 324. However, if open comp fails to be enacted this legislative session, then SB 324 as is.
If we very quickly have a work session and move this bill out before decisions are made on 2600 finally or 104, we'll just all watch this very carefully, catch it in the House, or somehow or other make changes in 104 to take care of it, right?
Senator, have you heard on that?
Sure, come on up.
No.
Evelyn.
He knows what I'm going to say.
Fine, Evelyn.
Before
Evelyn.
I get
Evelyn.
Into that, I just, excuse
Rocky.
Me, my name is Evelyn Ferris, representing the Oregon Workers Compensation Federation. Before I get into that one, just briefly, I did want to clarify something on page 18, line 13. There is a slight change there. And it isn't that we have any objection to it, but I think it should be called to the committee's attention.
18, line 13.
Yeah, where
okay.
It says an insurer that issues a guaranteed contract or surety bond to an employer under this chapter may terminate liability. Prior to that, as you will notice from the stricken language, that the contributing employer or SAFE could only cancel out the contributing employer for failure of required contribution, fees, premiums, deposits, and so forth. So it is a change. We don't have any objection to it, but I thought that you should perhaps look at that.
Any comments on that, either of you? No?
No.
No. Any objections to it?
No.
No. Fine.
Okay, on this section 59, as Mr. McGavick has stated, in both House Bills 104, and I mean Senate Bill 104 and House Bill 2600, this has been changed to shall be a member. We think that it should be changed to shall be a member in Senate Bill 324. The reason that we feel that way and have felt this way for some time is right now it is at SAFE's election. SAFE has elected to be a member of the rating organization, but by being a voluntary member of the